Okay, perfect. So my name is Brianna, and I'm here with Heather. The date is June 5th, and it is 10:19 a.m. Can you introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about what you do for Casa Familiar?
Yes, my name is Heather Garcia. I work at Casa Familiar as Community Development Assistant and as the Supervisor for the Financial Literacy Program. So essentially, when I'm on the community when I have my community development hat on, I'm working with like SANDAG and getting representing our community there at different meetings. I am helping put together community meetings where we get feedback on certain projects, on projects we're doing, on projects that the city and county are doing. Right now, for instance, we're working on some housing development projects. So that's been taking up a lot of time. I also help with logistics and whatnot for our art gallery. And on the financial literacy side, I have a team of 4 people who are financial coaches and go out into the community. This program initially started as outreach for Mexican nationals who are immigrants here and don't understand the American financial system. So a lot of people we've been noticing for a while don't have bank accounts, ITIN numbers, don't know how to do their taxes, things like that. So we kind of try and bridge that gap.
Can you describe what your typical workday is like?
Sure. Let me see if I can open that door. Okay. So a typical workday for me starts, come in usually, check messages, emails. I'm usually here in front of the computer a lot. And if there are any community meetings, getting ready for those. Or SANDAG meetings, I sit on a board with my boss for community-based organizations, and we represent our communities at SANDAG. So for their regional transportation network, it's like a huge update they do every few years. We sit on there. So I'm down at SANDAG meetings like twice a month. And at our community meetings we have every other month, so kind of depending on where we are in the year. We've been super busy lately with grant writing, so usually, well, typical workday, I'll come in, check emails, make my to-do list, start working on whatever gets thrown at me, and then if I have any community meetings, one of the fun things, I think, and I'll kind of go into the second question, is we have, like, a really good group of people who are consistent at, like, coming to the events they like. So one event that's like our best attended is Zumba classes. We have free Zumba classes. So after those classes, I like to show up and like give any announcements or have meetings about like civic engagement. I come from the government world. I worked for politicians before I came here. So I'm always like looking for a way to engage people and be like, look, you know, if we want to fix our streets, because we hear lots of complaints. It's like, you don't like that pothole? Like, let's fix it. Let's go talk to the city or let's, you know, whatever. Some people are like, oh, well, the city never does anything. And they're talking about something. I'm like, no, that's county. That's why the city's not doing anything, because it's county. So I love having meetings like that, getting people involved, like, and to actually care about, like, boards where we have elected officials on, like our planning group. Mm-hmm. That was something I wasn't super familiar with. But there's a group of, like, 10 people here who are like, what is that? And they want to go to the meetings and, like, have... like we called it a chisme session, like a gossip session afterwards to talk about what happened and just get people involved, get them caring. And like first step, I think, is understanding what goes on, because they go to these meetings and they're like, I have no idea what just happened. How come they, you know, that person had to wait to talk and then they always talk to this person and I didn't understand that question and what was this? So it's been really fun to engage with them, take them to meetings, and then talk about it a little bit, and hopefully get some people elected to the board. That's one of our big goals. So that's, I would say, my favorite interactions that I get are probably those where I get to just like talk to people and do my best to get them excited about government and the different aspects and boards and city council meetings and things that people are like, yeah, no thanks. But get them into understanding a little bit and then saying, okay, well, I'd like to go, or maybe we could listen, or maybe we could engage with the city using their app or writing a letter or making phone calls to say, hey, there's this pothole on Buyer that is super big and no one's fixing it and it's a problem. So I think that's my favorite part, to get people excited and passionate about things that affect their everyday lives.
So you said you came from the government kind of side of things. When did you start working at CASA, and how did you transition from that to CASA?
Yeah, I came from the government side, working for elected officials, and I arrived at CASA in October of 2017. So I'm coming on to 8 months, 8 or 9 months now, and I had a contract, a temporary contract with the mayor of San Diego's office. So I was working at Mayor Faulkner's office, and then my time came to an end. And it was actually through a connection there that they said, oh, well, let me put you in touch with CASA. And I met Lisa and David and interviewed, and then ended up getting hired over here. And the transition was it was different. I had gone from a congressman's office to a state senator's office to the mayor's office. So elected officials at different levels, but still being elected officials. So I was very used to people coming and saying, look, this is a problem, and this and this and this. I'd be like, okay, it's my job to go find the solutions to that. Let's do it. When I came here, I was like, oh man, I'm on the nonprofit side. I'm the one who needs to know what these problems are, to take them and say, hey, this is the problem, you guys need to fix it. And for my first few SANDAG meetings and stuff, I would hear other people making comments and saying things, and I'm just thinking, I don't know what the problems are, but I know we can fix that by talking to this person. And so it took a few months to get that switch in my brain to go, okay, you need to take a step back. You're not the solution finder. You are now the problem identifier. So that transition was a little bit, not difficult, just kind of weird, because I'd never been on that side before. So now that I've been here for 8 months, I'm like, okay, I see things and I'm like, oh, I'll see a communication from the city. And I go, we should have had that in Spanish, or I wish they would have put Spanish on the other side or something. Because if I go give a flyer that's in English to someone, they're gonna be like, oh, thanks, but I have no idea what this is, and toss it. Mm-hmm. So just the simplest things like that, I've learned to okay, take a step back. We need to reach these people. What's the best way to do that? And now it's my turn to be the voice saying hey, don't forget, we need to do this, or don't forget about the South Bay. San Ysidro is part of the city of San Diego. So kind of making that switch and understanding the different roles has been the biggest transition point, I think.
Do you have any personal connections with CASA? I know you said you got to CASA through a connection, but do you have any personal connections with CASA itself, being Mexican American and standing for a lot of the things that they represent and do?
Yeah, so I am Mexican American. My mom was born in Mexico. My dad was born here, so on my dad's side, I am fourth generation born in the United States, but on my mom's side, I'm first. But I remember interviewing for the position, and at the end of the interview, they said, oh, is there anything else you want to let us know or tell us? And I said, however this goes, if I get the job or not, I just want you guys to know that I love your organization, and every city should have a Casa Familiar. And they kind of chuckled, but I was like, seriously, all the services and programs they provide and the resources and the events we have that kind of remind us of our culture and let us celebrate it are something that you don't see everywhere. A lot of low-income assistance, for filling out immigration papers, any kind of benefits, government benefits, we help fill those out. We have all our staff at the Social Services Center are, they're certified to help you with that. So when I started learning about all the programs they provide and all of the ways in which they really enrich this community, I was just like, dude, this is so cool. Like, whether I get the job or not, like, what a great nonprofit we have here. So when I came here and I got the job, I was like really stoked to have a different perspective on helping people, because I've always chosen jobs that put me in a position to help people. I think we're put on this earth to make it better, to make this a better place. And if we're not like doing something good, like something's wrong. So here I'm able to talk to people and like get them engaged and provide them knowledge of stuff they may have thought was useless before, something they're like, I could never understand that. But it's like, if I can give you one nugget of information and that like makes a difference, like that means I did it right. So that's what I love about this organization, that they're all about informing the community while at the same time like having those events where we have fun and we get to celebrate our heritage and we get to eat tamales and stuff, like, and speak in Spanglish and just celebrate who we are, like where we come from.
So it's been a pretty positive experience so far?
Yeah. Yeah. There's been a few times where like people say things or they get angry, but I think overall it's been just like, it's been really positive. People are super thankful for the work that we do and thankful for the events we put on. And sometimes like, yeah, they'll be like, oh, well, I didn't like those sandwiches. You should have had whatever. And I'm like, come on, in the grand scheme of things, sandwich. But it's been positive and like really nice, nice, like pleasant experience. Let me see.
Do you see yourself with CASA for a while? Because I know you enjoy it. I know it does a lot of great things.
Yeah, I definitely love the work we're doing. And if I continue to get the opportunity to keep doing that work and helping people like grow, expand their knowledge, help them just gain a better quality of life, I would love to keep doing that.
So I know you said you were first generation on your mom's side and fourth generation on your dad's side. So did you like learn Spanish growing up from your mom, or was it your first language, or is it kind of like a dual thing?
I learned Spanish and English at the same time. So I spoke like, I want my shoe zapato, or I'm gonna get my queso cheese or whatever. So I spoke both together for a very long time. Well, not very long, for like a year or two. Both of my parents speak Spanish. So it was just kind of like natural. Like they were like, we're teaching our kids Spanish. So I learned at home. I have two younger siblings who also learned at home, but it was harder for them. My brother was like, I'm not super sure about learning Spanish. My younger sister still struggles a little bit with Spanish, but I learned both of them at the same time and like have always spoken both languages. I went and studied abroad for a year and learned Italian. And that was when my Spanish started getting confusing, because I would start mixing up Spanish and Italian. But I've spoken Spanish my whole life.
So do you know your mom's story of like coming to the United States of her crossing, or what that process might have been like?
Vaguely, her dad was working in Calexico. He migrated from Sonora and when he was young, like 16. And Calexico is a border town like we are, San Isidro and Tijuana, Calexico and Mexicali. So her dad spent time in Mexicali, and that's where he met his future wife. So they got married. He was still living over here and working, and my mom and grandmother were in Calexico. So my mom was born, in Mexicali. My mom was born, and I think like at 6 months, she immigrated to the United States. So she lived here like her whole life. She lived 6 months in Mexico. But since they lived in Calexico on a border town, I mean, they traveled back and forth a ton too. And a lot of family was in Mexicali, so they spent like weekends over there and holidays and stuff. So it was, she immigrated here rather quickly, but very, like, lived a very, like, border crossing life. I don't know how you say that, but like, she lived in both countries, like, sort of.
Do you know if your mom faced any challenges from when she first started living in the United States, or do you know of anyone from CASA that might have had challenges when they first immigrated over?
My mom, I never heard of anything. She was really young, so she was a baby when she came. But I know, like, her parents, her mom, like, to this day doesn't speak English and still, like, is sort of very much, like, prefers to have she, like, prefers to pay her bills in person. She refuses to do anything online. And that just might be, like, a technology thing. But very, like, her and her husband were like, okay, we gotta go do this. We're gonna, like, go buy the groceries, like, for a couple of days only, which is very, like, traditional Mexican. Like, I know over there they like to buy, you know, what you're gonna use today, and then you go again tomorrow and stuff. Where I feel like, at least in my house, we, like, buy for the whole week or, like, stock up at Costco or something. Yeah. So that was something that I think they brought with them. But any difficulties they faced, I mean, the typical difficulties, my grandfather was a farm worker. So he worked very rough labor out in the sun. He would travel to wherever the work was. So that was something I think as immigrants is kind of like a sort of typical thing that we see a lot with Mexican immigrants, but he worked that life. My grandmother didn't work, but it was like very, it was just difficult work, but I don't know if it was difficulties faced like when coming here. I'm trying to think. I know, I mean, like I mentioned, the typical difficulties just coming to a whole new country with a different language and a different government system, financial system, education system, that is just kind of like, I'm sure the culture shock hits pretty hard. And having transplanted to another culture for a year, I get that, where you're like, this is so different. But any immigrants, like, I don't have any, like, personal stories or stories of people I've spoken with. Just the typical, like, well, you know, language is hard, and sometimes it's kind of scary to go to the store or to go buy things because you know, what if you have to say something you don't know how to say, or no one speaks Spanish or things like that.
Mm-hmm. What differences in job opportunities and education do you see here in the States versus in Mexico?
I think, one thing I've noticed just kind of in working with immigrant communities is the job opportunities here, it's more like based on the financial aspect. The jobs that people can get in Mexico, I think, might be like less labor involved. And here, you might make more money, but have to work more sort of backbreaking jobs. That definitely exists in Mexico. There are, like, I mean, farm workers and stuff. But I think here, we see a majority of immigrants coming in working more, like, backbreaking work for maybe higher wages than they would get in Mexico. But still, like, I think that's one thing. And education, and this is just kind of like based on my experience, I've noticed that a lot of people who come from Mexico, older maybe, have far less education than here. Here you, like, have to go at least to 10th grade, and you can't really drop out before then. In Mexico, like, one of my grandfathers only got a third up to a third grade education. The other one I think got to like sixth grade. So I've seen that a lot in our financial literacy program too, where people we ask what their level of education is, and it's like elementary school, maybe eighth grade. It's just a lot lower, which is I think it's just based on the need that people have to start working younger. But that's one thing, like they have wonderful universities and like well-recognized schools, but I don't know exactly what it is. I wish I were an anthropologist, but it's very interesting to see that people have lower, like far lower education levels than a typical American would.
Do you think that the lower education levels make it tougher for them coming here?
Yeah, I think like absolutely, because one of the like easiest ways to get into the country is like if you're being sponsored because you have a job, if you're coming because there's like a necessity that needs to be filled because we need more like rocket scientists or whatever, and if you don't like fulfill those categories, or you can check off those like I have a master's degree or PhD or a bachelor's degree even, like it makes it harder for your application to be like competitive. So I think when it comes to immigrating, like for sure, you if you're it's like one more thing that's like, oh well, if this person has, you know, a level higher, like let's take the person with more education because they can like help, you know, the economy or whatever it may be. But I think it is a factor that does play in.
You spoke a little bit about culture already, but have you seen a difference in culture between families that have been in the US for a while versus immigrant families that have not? Like, did they keep any traditions or customs from Mexico, or did they kind of develop a new, like, Mexicali or something?
Yeah, I think so. I think families who have been here and maybe are like their kids are starting to be born here and grandkids, you definitely have like that blending of cultures where you might watch Sábado Gigante, but you're also like, you know, you started the morning with like Saturday morning cartoons or something. So you definitely see like the blend. It's almost like a marble of I have like my Mexican and my American, and it sort of like overlaps and comes together. Some customs I think that and culture transfers and traditions that come about are I think we're pretty good at keeping those as Mexicans. Like you always have to have your tamales at Christmas. And I have been to countless Thanksgiving dinners where we have the turkey and the mashed potatoes and the green bean casserole, but we have our rice and beans on the side too, and maybe like carne asada. So I think we do a good job, at least in my experience, of like mixing the two cultures, where it's like, yeah, I can be American and have my Thanksgiving, but I'm also gonna have like my rice and beans on the side of my turkey. So I think that's really interesting, how the two just like we sort of seamlessly blend them together. It's not like, oh, I can't have turkey with my rice and beans, and I kind of like I've seen a lot of blending, like you have salsa on the Thanksgiving table or something.
Do you have any traditions like that back home? Like, 'cause I know your mom like coming in, and then maybe your dad is like, no, we do it this way, or
Yeah, it's always been like a mix of the two. Like you have rice and beans with your we've always had rice and beans with our turkey. For Christmas, you always have the tamales, and it's kind of weird, but it's like our norm, where you go somewhere and you're like, oh, they don't have rice and beans here, or like where, what, it's a birthday party, why don't they have tacos? Like what's going on?
So yeah, I mean, I feel like with all like the Mexican immigrants though, the culture, like the traditions and stuff like that itself isn't too big of a culture shock. But do you see any other lifestyle type changes other than the culture itself when living here?
One thing that stands out, I think, is like mothers, women who typically didn't have a job, or maybe when they lived in Mexico, they didn't have a job. They come, and over here, it's just like you have to work in order to support the family. So I think that's one thing. We have Mexican culture is very machista, so it's like the man works and the woman stays home and cleans and cooks, and that's just the way it is. So when you come here and you kind of feel that financial burden of like, am I gonna make my rent? Am I gonna be able to put food on the table? And it's like, okay, well, time to work. And it's I would imagine it's an adjustment because you're used to things being a certain way, and when you have a full-time job, your bathroom can't be like so clean that you can eat out of it. So those kinds of like tweaks and adjustments that people have to make that seem kind of basic and you wouldn't like super think would be a big burden, I think are something that can really make a difference. Also I've noticed just in my experience is that a lot of times people maybe had more money or were more well off in Mexico and come and live very poor, like they're not at that same level where like at back home they owned a ranch and they had like people work for them and all this, and then they come and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, this is a very different lifestyle now. Like I'm the one who's gonna be doing the work that I used to pay people to do. And that kind of stuff is it's like total change.
So after living in the States for a long time, do you think you could ever see any of the like family that caused them moving back? Like I know you said the like money-wise, it is a lot different. So do you think people come here and then just decide like, no, this isn't for me and maybe go back?
I've seen it a handful of times where it's like, no, I can't afford life here. I'm breaking my back. Like, I'm just gonna go back. And, or I can live on my Social Security, like, come here and work and then say like, but I'm not gonna like continue working until I'm 80 to be able to like just survive. So I have seen a handful of times people say, I'm taking my Social Security check is gonna go a lot farther back home. But I think for the most part, just even being like a person who lives paycheck to paycheck and works super hard and long hours here in the States, people see the opportunity it provides, even, I mean, as basic as education. And I've seen a lot of families. My dad's a pastor, so I've been around church, working in Spanish churches with mainly the Mexican community for like my whole life. So I see I pull from a lot of experience there too, where like someone will arrive, like the male head of household will arrive and say, no, I came here to work and I'm sending my money back home because I'm building a house or just to keep my family afloat or whatever. And then a few years in, they bring their family because they're like, I can't provide my family with what they need over there and sustain myself. Plus, we're separated. So let's just see, what kind of life we can make here. And you hear a lot of like, oh, well, mi rancho, I'm gonna go back, I'm gonna go back, or I'm building this or that. But I think you just become so accustomed to a life here that, like, and if your kids grow up here, how do you pull them out of that and transplant them somewhere to your like, oh yeah, I remember, and your kids just hear like, oh yeah, I remember you talked about that, Dad, but that's not what I like. I've never been here, or I've been here once when I was a little kid. I think that's the hard thing. Like once you put some roots down and live for years, your kids become accustomed to the culture. They get that marbling that I was talking about, that mix of cultures, and you go back home, you're like, wait. What's the, you don't have Thanksgiving here, like just different things. I think you once that culture sort of sets in and you create your own culture, it's hard. It's hard to go back. I mean, like I could never imagine living in another country, even Mexico where both of my parents lived. my dad lived in Mexico longer than my mom did, but it's just, it's kind of weird because I'm like, no, this is my home. This is my culture. Like, I like it. I like my life. Mm-hmm. So I think that becomes part of it where you get accustomed to something and it turns out that you like it and you might even think it's better or worse, but you're like, I like this. I can do this. And then like going back and transplanting your whole life again, it's hard.
Do you think your dad would ever go back and then maybe just to retire? Or?
He's talked about it and he's like, oh, I can go back like and buy a really nice condo on the beach and stuff. And I'm like, dude, really? And he's like, yeah, he lived in an undeveloped area of Tijuana that didn't have running water or electricity. So for 9 years, he lived there, and it was, like, normal. They would take showers, like, with buckets and have to heat up the water and stuff. So he's like, oh, now? It's a breeze. I'm like, oh. But he's done it before. And I'm like, I've never lived there. I've gone to visit a bunch of times, but to, like, live there and be like, this is where I want to live? I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to think about that. He's been like, yeah. My mom, like, no, I am not going to live in Mexico. She's like, no, I'm American. So it's weird.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the ways that you've seen CASA help these immigrant families or like certain individuals?
Yeah, I think some of the things that we focus on here at CASA are like preserving the culture and the heritage and like celebrating that and being proud of it. We have big events on Dia de los Reyes, which is kind of like our extension of Christmas. It's actually like bigger, more celebrated than Christmas is. And Dia de los Muertos, which is around Halloween, but it's a time to remember and celebrate the dead. So I think those are big ways that CASA preserves that history. We're one of the few like big parties around those events here in San Diego County. I think we also focus a lot on bringing resources and assistance to people, whether that's at our social services center that does a lot of immigration work and just basic social services. They provide a lot of that. Also providing resources of like information, different workshops that are going on, bringing local government agencies here to San Ysidro so people have access. And also providing the connections that are necessary to like make our voices heard. We work really hard on making sure that we have good relationships with elected officials and local government agencies, like other like big companies in the area, so that when things are going on or we have a phone number we can call. And I think CASA works really hard at making sure that the people here in San Ysidro know what is available to them and take advantage of that. And also like things that affect our community a lot, like a lot of health risks, diabetes. We have classes on diabetes, how to take control of your health, like parenting, like advice talks. We have like the free Zumba classes and exercise classes that people come to, and it just gives people like an hour to come and exercise, and it becomes part of their day, and they make friends. And so we try to do a lot of just free resources to the community or very low cost, so that they feel like so they have a place that they know they can go to for good information. Sometimes we don't provide certain services they're asking for, but we can refer them somewhere and they trust us. We've been in the community for about 45 years now, so it's a place that everyone here knows and trusts. So we try to live up to the expectation that people have of our organization and provide the best information, the most quality information, and like just be sometimes a listening ear and a friend.
Do you know of any other maybe like border states that have some sort of nonprofit like CASA?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. We should look into that. Because that'd be really cool to like form a coalition or something, just to talk about different programs and different difficulties that our clients are facing. That's a really good idea. I'm going to write that down.
So CASA does do a lot in like many different ways for the community, but is there still something that you would like to see CASA maybe do in the future, or like any new programs?
Yeah, I think focusing in on our culture and teaching young people about like Mexican history, that's something that we don't learn here very much. We get like the highlights of different wars, but learning the history of our ancestors, because a lot of times you see like children of immigrants who don't speak Spanish or like kind of understand, or who like don't know anything about Mexican culture. And like, I get it. A lot of times parents come here and they're like, look, you need to learn English, you need to do this, you need to like fit in. And if you come, like, you can let a lot of that fall by the wayside. So I think maybe having like a cultural center or classes that help like teach history or just help our kids understand their heritage a little bit more, why we do certain things, why we have certain traditions, I think that would be cool to see. I studied history in college, so I like that aspect of bringing it back. And I think I'd like to see like a sharper and like more tailored focus on civic engagement and just more like civic understanding, because a lot of people, well, they come and they don't understand our government. If I went to Mexico, I couldn't tell you like, this is the way it works and these are the people and counties and stuff. Like, we're here, we have a lot of pieces to this huge puzzle that we call government. So maybe like focusing on teaching people that civic part, and we have like citizenship classes and like basic classes like that, but something that teaches people the basics, like this is, and tailored to San Diego, this is like this, you know, the city stuff. And since we're kind of far from the city, we have a couple cities in between us to know the differences, who to go to and like who to complain to when things are going a little sour. So I'd like to see those two things.
What do you want to see get passed on to future generations?
I think I'd like to see the importance of education passed on, and like more, I want to see more people graduating from high school and college and master's degrees and postgraduate work. Like, I'd like to see that. I was raised in a home where like education was super important, and a lot of times I see that it's kind of lacking in our community. And they're like, oh, I'll finish high school and then I'll get a job or whatever. And we sort of see that complacency, or even like lack of confidence, like, oh, I can't do that, I'm not smart enough. And I hear that a lot from like, oh no, my kid, it's because they're not that smart, so you know, they're not gonna go to college and waste money. And it's like, no, like, you need to push yourself and do it. So I'd like to see that just like love of education and learning, and like that pursuit, that like undying, like never ending pursuit of learning. And I think I've talked about it a lot, like just loving and understanding your heritage and knowing where it comes from and knowing why we believe certain ways, why we do certain things, and not letting that be a barrier to who we are, who we want to become. Like, you can be a PhD like professor and still eat your tamales and still eat your rice and beans with your turkey. Like, to know and say like, this is part of who I am, like it's part of what has formed me. I like to see that, those two things.
So education is big in your family. Is like all of your family, did they go to college?
My dad has done postgraduate work, postdoctoral work. I have a bachelor's degree. My brother just graduated and is working on a master's. My sister is halfway through college, which I can't believe. But my mom did not go to college. She got married really young. While my dad, he was a pastor. He was her pastor, actually. and they met and got married, and then he was sent off to go get his master's degree. So while he was working on his master's degree, she was working, and then I came along, and a few years later my brother came along, so she just never got that chance. But we, in our immediate family, we have worked really hard to achieve those goals. But like, my dad came from a family that he was the first in his family to go to college. His brothers didn't go to college. Same on my mom's side. We would be the first ones. So it's kind of like a mix, but something that's really important. And like, I always tell kids around me at church, and like anyone who will listen, really, be like, you need to go to college and finish, but also take a year and go abroad. That's like my two cents all the time. I'm like, take a year abroad. I don't care if your mom gets mad at me. Tell her to come talk to me.
But do you think your mom would ever see herself going back to college? Because I have someone in one of my classes, he's actually in his 60s, and his reason for coming back to school was he was in an industry that he saw wasn't making very much progress because of all the new technologies and stuff, and so he wanted to get with the times and kind of update his, you know, resume and whatnot, and get some sort of education and learning for nowadays.
And get like the skills that he needed to. It was always her goal, but unfortunately she passed away, so it was always her, you know, she's always talking about it, like, oh, if I would have done this, or like, I'm gonna do it once I get you kids out, I'm gonna do it, I want to do it. So it was always a plan.
Is there anything that we didn't discuss that you, you know, want to talk about?
We hit a lot. Let's see. I think, like I've said a bunch of times, so we have talked about it, but celebrating our culture and like just celebrating that the United States, America, is a melting pot. Like, we are that marbling I talked about. I really like that metaphor today. Like, we have made up this country by accepting all kinds of different cultures and like taking a piece of it and saying like, oh, I like that. Like, I learned this from, you know, this family or whatever. And just being accepting of cultures and celebrating your own while not putting others down. So I think like working together to advance everyone and working together to make a better place, to make everybody's quality of life better, is like just such an important like piece of life, that if we would all put our differences aside, like, I know we have differences, but to work on the things and like pick out the pieces that we can say like, okay, I agree with you on 100 different things and I disagree with you on 1,000,000, but let's work on 100 things. Like, there's 100 things we could accomplish instead of arguing about the 1,000,000 things that we can never work together on. Like, focusing on what we can do together to make it better. Oh, there we go. I've got a campaign slogan. to just increase the quality of life and just make it a better place. Like, that, I feel like that's why we're here. That's the goal. To leave this place a little bit better than when we got here. So if we can work together and do that, despite colors and creeds and religion and politics and everything, that we can just work together and make it a better place, we'll be on the right track.
All right, that's all I have. So thank you for this interview. I really enjoyed it. It was very informative.
Wonderful.
And I really appreciate everything that CASA does. I've been there quite a few times, and every time I go, I'm just like, this is amazing.
Yeah, it's that's how I was. I told, like, in my interview, I said, you know, whatever happens, this is such a great place. Like, I'm so glad that CASA exists.
Do you think you would have like attended events and whatnot, even if like if you hadn't gotten the job?
Yeah, probably. You would have been like looking for stuff. I live in North County, so it's kind of a drive, and I had never heard of CASA Familiar until I was connected with them, but. I like in mentioning it to my family, like my uncles, I've been like, oh yeah, I work for CASA Familiar. It's insane. They're like, yeah, CASA. And they're like talking about, I'm like, how come no one ever told me about this? Because I've been keeping this secret. One of my uncles worked for the Border Patrol, and he literally worked right next door. And I'm like, dude, nobody told me. One of my other uncles was like, yeah, I worked with Gasser, like I saw them. And another one of he was my great uncle. He's like, oh yeah, that lady who worked there for many years. I'm like, yeah, Andrea, whatever. He's like, oh yeah, I talked to her. I'm like, what the heck, people? No one said anything.
You can go to like CASA and just mention maybe one of your family members' names and like, yeah, I
know.
Yeah,
I should do that. I should be like, hey, you ever hear about this person or that person? I should. I should totally do it. But I know it's nuts. But it's like such, I love places like this who provide the help that's needed and also like, you know, are working to just make it a better place. And it's hard. I mean, it's hard work. I have to put on like 100 different hats sometimes where it's like I'm doing this and like switch to this and stuff, but it's like gratifying because you get to see like the impact you're making and you get to have a conversation with someone who's like, oh yeah, you know, this and this, and my kids have asthma, so that's why I've been really interested in like the air quality work you guys are doing, which I didn't talk about, but like doing all that kind of stuff. And like now we're getting the state and federal government to recognize that San Ysidro is an area that is really, really affected by a lot of air pollution and the health problems that come with that. So it's like the hard work of the writing the grants and like the work, like the all the work afterwards and stuff. But you're like, okay, at least we're making a difference. Like people are noticing, we're advancing the needle just a little bit, but we're getting there. Mm-hmm. So that's what I like. I like especially that tangible part where you say like, oh, I've been in my office for a week. I haven't left. Like, I've been eating at my desk and writing emails all day long. But, like, okay, we did something. Like, it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually went to the art project for the final art project for the docents program.
Mm-hmm.
Where they made, like, the canvases with, like, the soot and, like, air pollution stuff from, like, oranges.
Yeah.
And I had no, like, idea that it was that bad.
Yeah.
And so I was just, like, kind of blown away, you know? Mm-hmm.
Me too. I was like, air pollution? I'm like, oh, is it bad here? And like, you know, with the border crossing, I'm like, duh. Cars are just idling. They're just sitting there and releasing all the junk, and we're breathing it. Like, it makes total sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really crazy, but very interesting. Very good work. Very interesting work. Sometimes a pain, but you got to get through the bad to get to the good.
That's true, yeah. All right, well, thank you.
Okie doke.
Got it.
Sweet deal.
Thank you so much. Sorry, just take me a minute to put all this away.